Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
And welcome back to the Whale Hunting Podcast, where we shine a light onto the hidden worlds of money and power. I'm Megan, producer on the show, and this week I wanted to share a fascinating interview from our archives. Back in 2022, Whale Hunting host Bradley Hope took a look into the hidden world of private surveillance, a world he's gotten to know personally in his work investigating corruption over the years. It's a shadowy practice, but one employed every day by oligarchs, intelligence services, and the ultra-rich all over the world. In this interview, Bradley spoke with an industry insider, codenamed Oscar Zero, who has dedicated her career to this kind of work. They met at a restaurant in London where she explained how she got into private surveillance, as well as what journalists and activists can do to protect themselves. Now, over to Bradley and Oscar Zero.
Can you tell me what you do for a living?
I'm the managing director of Sloan Risk Group, which is a company which offers security awareness and counter-espionage solutions.
And how did you get into that business?
It all stemmed from actually being in the cadets as a child. I then joined the army. I was in the military police and operated in a close protection role, which is basically bodyguarding for diplomats and high-ranking officers. I then moved over to the MOD and I was an operational officer for 10 years. So I have been able to kind of utilise elements of my training, which I gained throughout my career, and turn it into a commercial purpose, really.
And what does it entail, these kind of surveillance operations? I mean, what's the kind of the range and the size of the teams, and what does it kind of look like?
It can really vary. It can literally be from a couple of people up to 20 plus people. I'd say the average job commercially is probably 6 people.
Is this happening where there's a team of 20 people potentially following someone?
For one person, that would be a bit extreme. That might be perhaps if they're expected to move across a few locations or travel somewhere. But yeah, no, sort of 4 to 6 people would be quite normal.
And, you know, journalists and activists, they have to speak to sensitive sources and receive sometimes confidential information. Do you think that people will be able to use these tools to be able to penetrate, you know, the secrecy of those projects?
Yeah, certainly. I think if someone wants to obtain that information and they've got the money, they will certainly utilise, you know, surveillance. There's a lot of companies out there that won't necessarily vet their clients and will take on a lot of projects that we perhaps wouldn't.
And is there something that people can do that would at least reduce the risk in some way? What are some of the tactics people could use?
So I think the main one would be having an idea if you are likely to be under threat. And this could be a journalist. We often work for lawyers. It really is anyone with privilege or sensitive information. And so they need to understand that they could be under threat. And not just them, their family. For instance, social media, the things their partners put on social media. Be aware of what you're putting out there. And be aware of your surroundings. You need to know who's around you, what they're doing, what you're saying. Quite often I'll be on the train and I'll overhear conversations which I really shouldn't be able to hear.
And are there some more aggressive tactics you could use as well if you thought that you might be under surveillance but you still needed to get somewhere and meet someone?
Yeah, so initially you would need to detect the surveillance. So there are various tactics that you could do which will kind of draw surveillance out. For instance, I mean, you can be aggressive or you can be covert. You might literally turn around and start walking in the opposite direction. There might be some role play involved. You can either do this really aggressively and sort of start staring at people to gauge for a reaction, because primarily you are looking for unnatural behaviour and repeat sightings of people. Or you could be really covert. You could sort of do that by looking in a reflection. You might, for instance, do a route where you go into a building and you come straight out of another door, and then you might position yourself somewhere so you can sort of see if someone's followed you doing that.
And I would imagine the motives you've come across in your career would run quite a range. Marital, espionage, I mean, what are some of the kind of scenarios that might exist out there?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the lower end of the scale is your matrimonial jobs, and it's very often the high net worth couples who will invest in surveillance because they've got the money to pay for it. And then going up the scale, you've got your corporate espionage. And that's when things can really get interesting, and there's some high stakes, and you have to really, really choose your operators well and be really clear in what you can and can't do.
Are there any laws that regulate that kind of activity across a city like London?
It very much depends on the job and annual justification. I mean, surveillance should almost be a last resort. It needs to be lawful. You know, you have to be able to sort of stand up in front of a judge and say, this is why I did what I did, and, you know, have a genuine reason.
These teams, obviously, they're following people through the streets. If they come into a restaurant like this, what could they do beyond just following? I mean, do they have any other kind of equipment and technology they could use?
Yeah, so they would sit down, and typically they might have covert cameras, they might have audio eavesdropping devices, and somewhere like this, it's very quiet. Someone in this room would hear our conversation really clearly.
And often one of the goals of a project isn't really to follow them around so much as to capture who they're meeting and what they're saying along the way.
Yeah, it might be that they actually, their interest is the person they're following is going to meet.
And how do you figure out who the person that they're meeting is?
So that's typically when they would get in quite close, and they would try and sort of get into meeting places, sit as close as they can to that person.
And maybe follow them as well from that meeting.
Yeah, then they might perhaps become the primary target afterwards.
Why do you think London is such a kind of centre for corporate espionage and surveillance?
I think because there is such a range of people in London. You've got so many different nationalities. You've got a lot of wealth. You've got people that store their wealth here. You've got people that feel safe here. You can do a lot here that you can't get away with in other countries. We're not monitored in the way that many people are. And there is that sense of freedom that you can perhaps get away with a lot more. It's a very easy place to conduct surveillance.
Is it risky for the company who's doing these things? I mean, are your people sometimes, could they be exposed to danger in doing this kind of work?
Depending on the job, it's possible. I mean, I think the main problem is if you don't get the full information from the client. I have heard of cases where perhaps the client hasn't told the surveillance company that they have put someone under surveillance before. So that person, you know, is actually highly surveillance aware. And of course, you know, people will react to that. So yes, it can be dangerous.
And if a client were to come to one of those companies that's doing surveillance and they said, we want you to follow this activist or a journalist, is it kind of incumbent on the company to make a decision whether or not to take that job?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, personally, we would never follow journalists. They've got the freedom to be doing what they're doing, and the sort of clients that would want them followed is probably going to lead to something you don't really want to be tangled with. But people will, yeah, and they need to make that decision, and they need to justify their actions.
Do you know who your client is if you're a surveillance company? Is it through a proxy, like a law firm?
Yeah, so that happens a lot. Technically, if I was employed by a law firm, they would be my clients. And because so much of this work is done on a need-to-know basis, you have to assume that you're not getting all of the information. And you often have to make a judgment based on what you're being told and reading between the lines, and kind of being really sure in who you're getting involved with.
It sounds like a very exciting thing, surveillance, but I would imagine a lot of it is actually sitting around and sort of waiting and hoping something's going to happen, I guess.
Yeah, it's probably 80% hanging around and 20% action.
And typically a surveillance day would start from the moment someone leaves their house, right?
There is a client who is paying money for the operation to go ahead. They want their money's worth, and they don't want to take a risk of losing that person. So most people would probably set up outside the house to get the maximum benefit from the operation.
And the team itself, what's the team look like? Do they have different appearances? Do they have different kinds of vehicles, that kind of thing?
If you are dealing with a highly professional company, you won't know their surveillance. You know, they will have a range of profiles, a range of ages, different types of vehicles, and they'll be natural and they'll fit in with their surroundings.
It sounds a bit scary, to be honest, to have a team following you around. If you're a journalist or an activist or a business person for that matter, what should be the first thing you think about or feel when you think that this could be happening to you?
The first thing I would say is don't be afraid. Surveillance is primarily trying to get information. It's not a sign of an imminent attack. So what I would say to journalists and people like that is have a plan. You should know if there's a credible threat against you. You know what you're involved in. And it's having that plan of when you think surveillance is out there, it's understanding how to detect it and what to do. Where is the place you're going to go? Where is the route in your head where you can have a proper look back without looking obvious? And if you do feel threatened, where's the safe place that you can get to?
That's it for this week. If you'd like to watch Bradley try and outwit Oscar Zero and her surveillance team, head to Brazen's YouTube, where you can find our documentary, Hidden Wilds, following their operation. Thanks for listening.
Whale Hunting is a production of Project Brazen. It's hosted by me, Tom Wright, and Bradley Hope. It's produced by Megan Dean and Claire Urban. At Project Brazen, Mariangel Gonzalez is our project manager, Ryan Ho is the creative director, with additional design from Andrea Claridge. For more from Whale Hunting and to subscribe to our newsletter, visit whalehunting.projectbrazen.com.